The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Yeah, every Friday we invite somebody into Studio 10 and we ask them to guide us through the soundtrack to their lives. And today is the turn of John Kenny.
My God.
Do you have walk-on music? Did you ever have walk-on music?
No, actually, I didn't. No, never had.
What would you choose? Because I know you're a man who's into his music.
Oh, yeah, I kind of like music. But, I don't know what I'd like. And the Pink Panther.
Din, din, din.
Sure, you couldn't get better walking music than that. It is walking music, isn't it?
Oh, don't. And you can do the little jump into the air.
A little skip here and skip there, maybe, yeah.
And I might get it for you, so you might walk out to it.
I could, yeah. Walk out of the building.
Great to see you.
Leaving the building.
Great to see you. You were saying you're involved in the fit-ups down in West Cork there during the summer.
Yeah, that's
now,
right.
Now, I've heard about these over the years. Mm. And I've never actually quizzed anybody about them, so you're the man. You're sitting in front of me.
I hope I am. I suppose Jeff Gould is the man to ask, because it was Jeff's brainchild.
But there's not just these ones, but there's a tradition of fit-ups. What is it, a travelling theatre group?
Well, basically a travelling group of players, and that's what they were. And they would normally leave, well, in Ireland, I suppose the tradition would be to leave bigger cities like Dublin or Belfast or wherever, maybe Cork, and they'd go out into the counties then. They'd go out into the rural regions over the summer, and they'd tour there over the summer. And they'd do parish halls, a lot of them didn't have travel with actually facilities, like they might have a few lights and a few drapes and maybe some backdrops and stuff, some more than others, I suppose, depending on how sophisticated they were.
But was it a play or was it sketches or what was it?
It could be, depending on who was doing it. I mean, you had Shakespeare done, you had plays done. Then you could have maybe two one-act plays and you could have some light entertainment in the middle. You could have a variety show, you know.
Because the word fit-ups, sort of implies a sort of a skit sort of thing.
It had you could actually see very serious and good theatre in it. And a lot of fine actors many years ago were involved in the fit-ups, you know. I would have heard of them, I wouldn't have known them long before my time, but there are families I know, like the Heffernans here in Dublin, Michael Scott, who I worked with Mary, like Michael started out on the fit-ups. Working with a lot of the crew from RTE at the time, who would have been in the early days of the Weirdens, they would have been Abbey actors. They would go on the road over the summertime,
uh-huh,
and they'd pile into whatever was available mode of means of transport, you know. And they would just travel and do it, you know. And I suppose it goes back even further when you think about Percy French and that. Percy French, in his own way, that's what he did too. Like, although he did, you know, amazing venues here in Dublin and in London and every place else, and when he went abroad for the time he did. But they would tour just to local places. They put on concerts and he'd go from the big house maybe to the local hall or something like that, you know.
And where did you do? Where around West Cork?
This festival has been going now for, it's in its 10th or 11th year. And Jeff set it up. And it was, the whole idea was to bring theatre where there's no venues, where there's no, we'll say, what you might call official theatre, you know, but it's only a venue anyway. And he brings a different play every week over 6 or 7 weeks. So there's 7 weeks of shows, 6 nights a week in different spaces. And those spaces could be on Whiddy Island, they could be on Shirkin, they could be on Cape Clear, Glengariff, Bear as well, yeah. And you do a different venue every night. And you don't know, you could be playing in an old army barracks one night, you could be playing in a community hall the next night. The stage could be like a box one night, it could be like a football pitch the next night, you could be in a community centre. But it's great fun and it's good. I mean, what is amazing is the audiences and... the audiences that turn out on a Monday and Tuesday night, as I said, you wouldn't see that amount of people probably going into the Peacock or in the Abbey on a Monday night in any theatre in Dublin.
Yeah.
Whereas down in West Cork, there's a queue.
They're starved.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I think they're not that starved. Right. I think they're seeing really good theatre and they know what theatre is.
Yeah.
They're interested more than starved.
Right.
Sorry.
John, continue to correct me.
I will. I know. Should they think everyone in the country, but we're all backward, we're all starved still. But there's a lot of good stuff going on.
Yeah.
And there is a real passion for wanting to go and see theatre.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes, you know, it's good.
You're in The Crow Man.
I am. Another great piece of theatre,
yes.
Theatre was my life.
And it's not there, it's just Crow Man.
It's Crow Man, yes.
There's no there.
No.
It's at the Olympia Theatre and Wednesday the 4th, Thursday the 5th and Saturday the 7th of September. So you miss out the Friday.
That's good.
And tickets are on sale now. Yes. And it's a one-man show.
It is a one-man piece, yeah, completely.
Funny, dark,
everything,
sad.
Everything.
Every human emotion.
It's just kind of, it's just humanity. It's just life. It's kind of what you do in your normal day. It's the most ordinary story ever told. But it's beautiful because it is ordinary. It's about an ordinary guy, just like anyone. And it's about what he's feeling and what he's going through. And a very simple story, but a very beautiful story. You know, it's not going to change the world, but most of us that walk around this world, we don't change the world. We're getting by from day to day. And I suppose that's what the character does in this play. And in a lovely way, you know. And
Right, so you're here to talk us through the soundtrack to your life. You were born to John and Mary.
Yeah.
62 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, where
in
were you
September.
Born?
September.
So your birthday's coming up.
It is, yeah, the 28th, lads, so don't be shy. I was born in the Marion Nursing Home in Tipperary. And we travelled over the border from Limerick over to the Marion for me to come into the world. And then we went back over the border again.
All right. Back to hospital.
Back to hospital.
From hospital to hospital.
From hospital. We wouldn't call it a hospital though, where I was. But anyway, a nursing home, I think.
A nursing home.
Well,
yeah.
It was a place for having babies.
Yes.
I don't think it was a proper maternity. It was just.
Do you know how hospital got its name?
Well, there's a hospital there. It was set up in the 12th something by the Knights Templars.
Right.
And they were sort of semi kind of religious knights who took a vow, different vows, you know. And they're like, they'd be connected to Knights of Malta, the Crusades, all this idea, the Knights Templars, this is power. But this, there was many different factions of the Templars, you know. And this is the one with the Hospitallers. And they founded a monastery in hospital, which originally was known as Glen Oinne, which is, of course, the Glenavan. And the nearest village to us, which is known now as Knockainey, was known as Conock Oinne, which is the Hillavan, which is beautiful to think that the Hillavan and we grew up in the Glenavan. Sounds a bit nicer than hospital. A bit more romantic, doesn't it? Than hospital and Knockainey, like, you know? Glen Oinne and Conock Oinne. So that's how it got its name, yeah.
And what did the family do in hospital?
Well, my dad moved originally. He was working in the rag trade for, he worked in the co-op for Golden Vale, because he'd kind of been in the clothes business here in Dublin, and then he worked in London in the rag trade. And when he got there, then they opened a shop and he bought a pub and he had the other job. He had three jobs going.
Right.
So
what was the other job? The Golden Vale?
Golden Vale, the pub and the other shop down with my mum, yeah.
Right, okay. And many Kennys?
And there was five of us at that stage.
And where are you?
He was only 42 then.
Where are you in the mix?
He was even less, but I'm second youngest.
Okay.
Yeah, second youngest.
Boys, girls?
We have two boys, myself, my brother Tom. Tom is next to me, he'd be older, and three girls. Deirdre's younger, and Anna and Joan are older.
Right.
So,
you mentioned your dad's age, 42. That was the age he died.
Yeah.
What age were you when that happened?
I was about four when Dad passed away, you know, so.
And what are your memories of that?
Very little, you know, very little. Just none really. And I've often thought, you know, try to blank these things out, but I think that, you know, just so young. I don't have very, very little memories.
Have you any memories of him, though, as a man?
I do, actually. Yeah. I have one or two small ones. One was at Christmas time, when I think he came into the room and I kind of half woke up and there was a Santa at the end of my bed, because that's what he used to do. He used to borrow the Santa Claus outfit from the store, and he'd bring it home and dress up at Santa at Christmas.
Right, yeah.
And the other one was then, I think it was around St. Patrick's Day, that I think I remember him in the bar, and I came out because the lads had gone off to do something and they left me and they didn't take me, obviously, because I was too small and too, you know, they didn't want the small be minding me and they kind of ran off and left me. And I remember him taking me into the bar and giving me a glass of orange.
They're lovely memories.
They're just my two memories. They're the only two memories I have.
Nice ones, though.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're very nice, yeah.
So your mum was still a young woman, left with five young children.
She was, And so
was that tough?
I'd say it was, but she never complained much about it, you know. And she kind of got on with things, and I suppose she had to. I mean, there were very different times, you know. And I mean, a lot of Mam's family too would have been abroad. Jack was in England, Bridie was gone to New Zealand, and do you know, we had a history, you know, people moved, you know, not too many stayed, you know. A lot of her family were away, and we had no relations. It's not like both my parents had originally come from the west of Ireland. And they had moved from the West, they went to London and they got married in England. and then they came back to Ireland.
But
so we actually had no immediate family around us. So I said that was even tough back then because, you know, you'd no aunts, you'd no uncles, you'd no brothers, sisters, you'd no sort of intimate, immediate family around you who could support. You know,
And then the pub was still there and the shop was still there.
Yeah. But after a while then she sold the pub because she didn't like it. She never liked it, you know. She'd often say, like, how could you do it? Like, you know, waiting then. And she said the worst of all is when the local sergeant would come just before closing time.
And
checking to see was there anyone in. And when there wasn't, he'd come in each day the rest of the night and you couldn't get rid of him. She said, enough of that, like, move on, you know.
She was a big fan of the musicals. Your mother?
Well, you know, she was, but I think that's what kind of kept her going too. I mean, and kept us all going when we were young. The house is full of music. There was always music playing, you know. And she loved that. And, you know, it was constant. And it just was everything. All kinds of music. There was no holds barred, like from classical to jazz to anything. You name it, to folk. She just listened to everything, you know.
And vinyl.
All on vinyl, of course. Yeah, there was nothing else there, yeah.
We just picked one song from one musical, just to play it in.
I like you being in America, okay by me in America, everything free in America.
For a small fee in America.
Okay. Yeah.
West Side Story, 1961.
I think the original album is still at home.
Is it?
It's still in the house, yeah. I know it because it's, and I think the cover of it is not necessarily taken from that album. It's not taken from the movie. I think the cover, that album that we have, is more like what they used on the stage design on Broadway. And, that was played a lot.
Yeah. Isn't it mad to think, because we had The Sound of Music in our house, and Joseph and his amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and I think we had that one there as well.
Yeah.
The thing that you'd sit around and just listen, it seems very quaint and innocent, doesn't it?
Well, sure, people used to. There's people listening to the radio at the moment.
I know, would you believe that?
People are still sitting around listening.
But the fact that you'd gather as a family, you know.
I know. Well, you know, and maybe sometimes we didn't. Maybe it wasn't that ordered. Maybe I'm kind of a bit kind of romanticising it because we were young and we were probably saying, Jesus, man, would you shove on the Beatles or can we listen to like Joe Cocker? And she would say, no, I want to listen to West Side Story. I'm going to listen to South Pacific, you know. And hence, you just heard them so often. They became the soundtrack to your life. You began to know them, you know. You know, Maria. I said one time, we all thought we were the Von Trapp family in our house, you know.
Yeah.
Because anytime we got together, we'd all be feckin' singing. We were like a bunch of Aegis. We'd go from Oliver into South Pacific into West Side Story and we'd all be waving hands.
Great songs.
But they were brilliant songs. They're classic. An evergreen, as Bear Donovan used to say in Bruff, Lord to mercy and Bear. Bear had a collection of sheet music and he gave me a loan of it one time. And it was to absolutely die for. It was every classic, I'd say, that was ever written. And Bear just loved music.
Yeah.
And he'd all this sheet music. He'd say to me, they're all evergreens, John. They're evergreens. And they are. Yeah. There's a lot of evergreens out there.
And
you know,
you can read music, can you?
Very slow. I can't read at all. I'm dyslexic. I probably read music quicker than I can read.
So that brings us nicely on to your school days then.
Oh, God, dreadful. We skipped that one.
No.
That didn't last long, I tell you. That was a very short encounter. Me in academia.
Right, but I
got as far as the tick and I left after 2 years.
But very few people would have been diagnosed with dyslexia back in the day, would they, if at all?
Yeah, no, they weren't. But my mother knew and she did check it out. And
did she
knew that and they sorted out that I had a problem, that it wasn't that I was teak, as the fellow would say, and that I had a reading problem. And she did a lot of work on it herself. You know, she was telling teachers, there's a thing called dyslexia and this guy has it. And there's a thing called word blindness and that's what he has.
Right.
And so
can you remember then primary school, for example, and did it sort of turn you off school?
It did because it was a kind of, I mean, there were, it wasn't a very primary school for some, maybe, there was bits of it were romantic, but it was a different time, you know, getting the belt of a leather meant nothing, like, it's called corporal punishment now, like, you know, whereas like every day it was like a leather strap about a half inch thick or a cane.
Blackjack.
And if you miss spellings, which I was dyslexic, I missed them.
Yeah.
And my God, your hands would be reddened.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how would you enjoy that?
No, like,
I enjoyed lunch
in any
break
way, shape, or form.
And I enjoyed when the bell rang at the end and out the door with me. But now I'm saying that they weren't all that bad, but that was just a format. That's what happened. That's what people did. But I remember one teacher I had when I went into first and second class. And although my spelling was brutal, he encouraged me to write poetry. And he did say, forget about the spelling, you just write. And I remember having two poems published in the evening press.
Isn't that amazing?
It was amazing, yeah.
So he saw something in you.
Yeah, he saw
probably
something
that you didn't even see in yourself.
Yeah, just something in my head.
Yeah.
That, like, I could get this stuff out and it sounded or felt like poetry. I was painting pictures.
Yeah.
But that's what I've always done all my life. I suppose it's to counteract or balance out the other thing with when I see script on a page. I tend to see things visually. And I still do that.
So
I imagine
you,
stuff.
But like we just mentioned Crowman there. Yeah. It's a one-man show.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of script.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I'm good to learn. I have to learn. I have to keep going over and over a script. If I get a script at an audition, I'm useless. I just go brain dead.
Right.
So that has kind of held me back and a fair bit.
Have you developed any strategies over the years?
No, not really. I'm not that good. And I think some of it is psychological too, going back to when it was like the written word at school, stumbling over words and then finding out that you're going to get stood up against a wall and beaten for it. And I don't think it's a bit late now, you know. I'm a bit the old wounded warrior. You won't be fixing me now.
I'm just putting up with me lot.
But that's kind of true. Like, you have to, you know, you can't and just get on with it.
Yeah.
But I'd say that still is a fear, as a psychologically. I know it myself. There could be no other reason for, because when I'm on my own now, I don't go to sleep any now without reading a book. I have to read a book every night. I have to read every night. And I have to learn lines and I have to learn every line. I have to learn them off by heart.
Are you a slow reader then as well?
I am very slow. So I have to get the script out of my hand.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like, could you read a full paragraph and then have to go back to the start because you haven't...
I would tend to do that, because what you do is, you see, you often feel you miss things. I'm a devil like that. Like, but even when I get things, I hate just reading for reading's sake. Like, I could read a full, not even a paragraph, but maybe a chapter in a book. And if I feel I've missed something, I didn't quite get that. I'll go back and I'll read it again. And I'll read it again.
Yeah.
Because I want to understand it. Whereas I know some people sight read. And I'd say to them, did you not get that? Did you remember that? And they'd say, no, I didn't get that out of it at all.
Yeah, because they're skipping over it.
They're hurry to finish or something. You know, it's a different thing.
So school then and dyslexia, did that feed into your personality, do you think?
Oh, yeah, I'd say I did. I'd say I compensated. Sure you did. Why wouldn't you, you know? Yeah,
I mean, in what way?
I don't really know. I mean, I used to sing a lot and I think it was easier to sing than to read, you know, let's put it like that. And then we'd music at home and I was interested in music and yeah, I suppose it did in a lot of ways. And I suppose visual as well. I used to paint and I used to draw. So I did a lot of stuff like that when I was in my teenage years even, you know.
Teenage years, we have a couple of songs here. We'll play one and you can tell us why it's of relevance.
All right. We're all going on a summer holiday.
No more working for a week or two. Fun and laughter on a summer holiday. No more worries for me or you.
Cliff Richard, from a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So where does that come in your life?
Well, it actually comes a bit earlier but it was kind of hanging around the house for a long time too, you know. But I remember that being played, and that was early 60s as far as I know. After my dad had passed away, it was pre-teenage years for me. But as I said, that song was around for a while, but I remember my Auntie Peggy coming down from Athlone to be with us for a while, you know, after Dad had passed away. And I just remember that period she would happen to be around and I didn't know why, but she was there.
Uh-huh.
But Peggy used to love dancing and I was listening to your Jim earlier at 99 and he's
isn't
dancing.
That amazing?
Brilliant. Yeah. And I went to see Peggy a few weeks ago or about a month ago and I was saying, how's Peggy? Well, I said, we kind of did a bit of a jive around the kitchen and Peggy's in a good age. I won't give her age over the radio, not over the wireless. But she's of great age.
And you danced around the kitchen when you went upstairs?
Absolutely. I said, how's Peggy? Well, the only way I can describe it is we had a feckin' jive around the kitchen. And she can still move.
I don't think people dance enough anymore.
Well, I suppose, I don't look at the state of me, do I?
No, dance enough. So that was a pre-teens one.
This is a teens one. Yeah.
I tried to find her cause I tried to find her. I never knew just how much I missed her. Sorrow. Put your long gone hair and your eyes.
David Bowie.
Yeah.
Not his song, but an amazing version of it.
Great, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember, well, that is definitely teens because we played that with the band. We had a band then when we got to secondary school. We started a band, or the lads started a band.
What was the name of it?
Gimmick.
Right.
And I remember the first Christmas concert school, they had a concert in the school, and we said we'd do a gig, we'd do a slot. So that was one of the songs we played, was Sorrow. Yeah. And I just remember, yeah, that was great. Yeah, it was
And did you feel comfortable on stage?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I suppose, you know, I was. I felt, I wasn't.
With a singer?
I was, yeah.
Right.
I was. We had two singers. Myself and Sue used to share the vocals, you know.
And did you play an instrument as well?
A little bit, but not much, right, you know. Okay. Kind of hanging around the back strum and guitar, and I'm still hanging around the back strum and guitar, you know. And but it was great. I mean, that was brilliant because we had, I mean, that was really, I mean, where I'm so lucky to have had that time with the band, you know, because it just made up for everything else, you know, because there was a great sense of like trying to do something new, learning something new, listening to stuff, then trying to reproduce it, you know. And we weren't copying, but we were learning.
I know. But and you'd left school, you see.
Well, we did. We all left school early. We were still in school. Some
when
of
you
us
started,
yeah. And then most of us left then after intercert, and some after group cert into tech.
And so between 14 and 16. Did it become serious gimmick? It was more than just a school band then, did you?
Yeah, we tried to make a go of it, you know.
Right.
And we went playing gigs, and we got a manager, and we toured, and we kept touring, and we played ballrooms, and went to England and played working men's clubs and all kinds of things, you know. And so it was a great bit of an adventure, but it was hard because I suppose, you know, you get worn down. You know, we're no longer kids now rehearsing in a garage and having fun at home. You've decided that, like, you're going to go on the road and there's transport, and you suddenly rise after 2 years as none of us have a bean. And, you know, parents are getting worried about, like, Jesus, would you go back to school and get a job? Where's this going? Yeah. Like, what are you doing? It must have been awfully hard on all the parents, you know. But then they were brilliant to let us do what we wanted to do, you know.
And was there a moment then when you said, this isn't happening?
Well, it took me a long time. I stayed with it for 10 years. And yeah, it was very hard because it's not as if I really, there was periods of it, I always worked at it and I gave it everything I had, 100%. And you say, you know, this just isn't going to go anywhere, you know, and you have to stand back. And that's when around that time, I suppose I was in my early 20s and I did my first play. A guy that I know, John McGrath, asked me, he said to me, you know, I think you can act. And I said, I've never acted. I said, no, he says, I think you can. Would you be interested in doing a play with me? And I said, yeah, sure. Why not? As long as it's not too much, you know. So I did. I did one play with him. And then I remember the first play I did was a small little play. It was a little, it's like you'd have in the old fit-ups. What was it? Murder at Red Barn.
Right.
It was like something you'd get. It was actually an old script from an old fit-up show, believe it or not, now that I think of it. Like an old music hall piece. It was very stylized. And I did that. And then I did another short little play called Song for Sixpence. And then I did another one. Then he asked me to do a full-length play. And I had about three plays clocked up then. And the third, fourth play I did, I won kind of amateur best actor award. Right, and
in the country,
yeah,
right.
And it was my first time ever. I said, was I doing the wrong thing all the time? You know, I'm still playing a bit of music at the stage, like,
yeah,
truckload of gear and you know, equipment and still gigging. And I said, yeah, maybe I have been doing the wrong thing, you know. And I suddenly realized that someone switched the light on, that reading kind of wasn't this bad thing that I'd experienced, that I was now looking at it from a different way. And the joy that it was giving me because I could read a script and could take my time and then create a character and play a part. So it kind of changed. It just changed more than leaving the band, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It changed a lot of things.
You looked at yourself differently.
Absolutely. You felt different about yourself. You know, I'm not saying that everything I'd done up to that was a failure. It wasn't. Like, we recorded in Abbey Road. We recorded in Tooting. We toured in England. We met some great musicians.
You supported Mud.
We supported Mud and Susie Quattro and Sweet. And, you know, we met really nice people.
You know,
really great musicians along the way. Like, you just, you know, you got to meet them.
But the acting just was something different.
It was nice, It wasn't fucking Hollywood, but man, we were happy, you know.
I can't believe it's just 4 o'clock.
It's time to go home.
No, it's not actually, because I'm going to keep you over. But that went so quickly. I can't believe that. Anyway, there you go. You stay with us because we're going to take a commercial break. Then we're going to go to Noakes and we've another 7 or 8 minutes, which anyway, John Kenny.
Right. Okay. All right.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Sorry, looking at the lads, did I do damage or something?
No, I was just talking to you and not paying attention to. Yeah, John Kenny is still here. He's talking us through the soundtrack to his life.
515
redrte.ie. Right. We were just talking about his herb garden there. I enjoyed the fit up shows in Castleblaney so much, it gave me a love of drama, says Phil. And one of the best productions of The Lonesome West I ever saw was John Kenny and Pat Short. Comic timing and pathos was amazing. Fantastic actor. John is an absolute gent. I remember him performing in Trebolgan when I worked there. He's still the same, John, despite his success. Best wishes, Owl Stocks, is Tom Cotter in County Cork. Great to hear John on the radio. Had the pleasure of meeting him some time ago, to be exact 19 years ago, in Drumminear on the banks of the Shannon. It'd be luck to Derek, wouldn't it? Himself and Pat, along with Brendan Grace, were there to support the Bubblegum Club's heli cruise. The Bubblegum Club supported children with life-threatening illnesses with days out to improve their lives. Can you say hi to John and thank him for wonderful memories, says Keith.
Thanks, Keith.
Did you know Brendan well? Did you know Brendan Grace well?
Not that well, but no. We would meet, like. You'd meet and you'd say hi, and as the fella said, he was always great.
Yeah.
He was great.
John is fantastic and a gent. I've seen him perform many times over the years. I live in Castletown Bear and saw Crowman in Bear Island. I sat on his knee on the way back on the ferry for a photo. Great crack. That's Shirley. There you go. You want to be careful what you do.
I wish my wife had listened to this. Thanks be to God she's gone out.
Mary Foster here in Limerick. Say hello to John. I enjoy his shows and try to see him as often as I can. And John is a big part of my youth. In Tip, we danced to his band Gimmick in Emily. Go on, Gimmick.
Someone remembers us. And it wasn't all in vain.
And we laughed at his cabaret in Barry's in Galbally.
Oh, God.
Brilliant man. An absolute love listening to John Kenny. So down to earth, honest and funny, wonderful story and achievements, particularly with his reading difficulties, says Kate. And Murder in the Red Barn was done by Barron's Travelling Fit-Ups. Great memories of those days from Lara in County Monaghan.
My God.
There you go.
Now, I didn't know the origins of that, but I knew it was from an old fit-up piece, and we had the script of it, and that was the first play
They'll tell you. If they know, they'll tell you.
Yeah,
That's great
that someone knows the origins of that.
Now, you mentioned your wife.
Yeah.
Margie,
yeah.
I met her with you down in Dunmore East by accident recently.
Yeah.
How long are you together?
I think it's about 32 years now, going on 33.
Right.
Yeah. It's a bit of a fair old stretch, isn't it?
And you used to sing to her.
We were all sure. We'd be always singing. I'd probably sing to her tonight when I come back from Mary Howard's. Put me to bed now, my darling. Put me to bed and put myself on my knee. Well, she ended up listening to a lot of my old songs because there was time then when I was working with Theatre Omnibus, there wasn't an awful lot of money out of it, like, because they were doing kind of dance and mime and, you know, it was hard time now after that, like, you know, for a while. And so I got into kind of playing the guitar and just to make a few quid, like to keep going and keep petrol in the car and that. And that was around then I met Margie, so she's be fed up with me singing to her all the time, you know.
And you used to sing this one.
Winter, spring, summer or fall.
Yeah.
You're a big softy.
And I'll be there, you've got a friend.
James Taylor, Carole King song, You've Got a Friend.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of grew up listening to a lot of that as well, like, you know, between Joni Mitchell and James Taylor and, you know, Buffalo Springfield, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It was all there, like, and I growing up, and it was lovely, you know.
Sort
of
crossover folk, I suppose.
Yeah, it was, yeah, but it was that time of power. I mean, is there anyone... I don't know, have they ever been replaced since? You know, the early days of Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, Joni Mitchell, you know, all that. They're there. I know
that's
stuff
another debate.
There.
We'll have another time, right?
Yeah.
Crowman is on in the Olympia Theatre Wednesday the 4th, Thursday the 5th and Saturday the 7th.
Yes.
I'm sure you'll be back with Mary McAvoy and Matchmaker at some stage in the future as well.
I think we're going back to the Gaiety sometime in October, November.
Right, there you go.
November.
There you go.
But Crowman is the plan at the moment. I'm, you know, it's a project. Look, it's great. It's great to be out there doing it. It's a new play by a new writer, and I'm so lucky to be able to have it. Yes, I am. Yeah.
We got you up to your mid-20s or thereabouts.
You
have to go back for a second one.
Right.
Do you mind if we play a bit of Don Believables?
Oh, God, I don't. Go on, Venture.
That wasn't it. God, go on. It was sort of, I don't know. We just picked out a bit, just for, you know, old time's sake. So this is you and Pat, two characters at the back of a church.
Oh, yeah. Hey, man.
Tell me. What time are you hoping to be up at?
Oh, well, I'll save the dinner on for 12:30.
Lovely.
So So we're having soup, then we're having roast spuds, bile spuds, Indian spuds, old spuds, no spuds, mashed spuds. We're having roast beef, chili and ice cream, sweet cake. No tea, no wash up, straight out the door. I'd say we'll be at the match at about 5 to.
Lovely.
Your sense?
Paddy, we said we'd have a clear run of the day, so we did dinner this morning at 8:30.
It's a classic one, isn't it?
Still going on.
Yeah, it's still good. It's still good.
It's all right. Because, you see, it's true.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's so much of us there, and there's so much of us still there in that carry on, you know? Yeah. So while we still love it as much as anything else, you know?
Yeah, that's great.
I
watched loads of clips there this morning at lunchtime there and really enjoyed them. The one in the shop, how much of them? Yeah. 3 for a penny. How much of them?
Yeah.
Brilliant stuff. John, great to see you. Good luck.
Thanks, Ray. Thank you so much for having me on.
We'll talk again soon.
Yeah, with the help of God, we will for sure.
John Kenny, ladies and gentlemen. Yoo-hoo! Quick commercial break.
And
the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.